So for all of those, of you joining us online through our virtual pass, we're super excited to have you participating with us here today. I'm so excited to introduce our next speaker. Rachel Campos Duffy may have gotten her start on one of the stars on the iconic show MTV's The Real World in San Francisco. But today she is ranked as Newsmax's 50 most influential Latina leaders, and she is sought after for her honest, insightful, and often humorous real-world view of the news cycle and American public policy. Rachel is a published author, communications consultant, and television personality. You may see her most often on Fox News and Fox Business, as she's a contributor there and a regular guest host of hit shows like Fox and Friends and Outnumbered. She is also the host of Moms on Fox Nation. Rachel has appeared as a frequent guest on NBC's Today Show and ABC's The View. Her advocacy work has included serving as the national spokesperson for the Libre Initiative, a nonprofit group that advocates for the economic empowerment of Hispanics through limited government, entrepreneurship, and self-reliance. She has a bachelor's degree in economics from Arizona State University's Honors Program and a master's degree in international affairs from the University of California, San Diego. She lives in Wisconsin with her husband, Congressman Sean Duffy, and her 8 awesome kids, 2 of whom she's actually sent through this very program. So please join me in welcoming to the stage Rachel Campos Duffy.
Wow, thanks for being here today. Hi, Kelsey. are there any pity from Wisconsin here today? Yes, I heard there was going to be quite a few Wisconsin kids. And I also want to say hello to all the virtual people who are watching, the attendees, and tell you thanks for going online and watching us live. And at the end, we'll take questions from all of you here, but also from those of you watching virtually. How many of you saw the latest cover of Vanity Fair with Beto O'Rourke? Did any of you guys see it? Did you see he's trying to do the same pose that Ronald Reagan? Did you guys notice that? You can go onto my Twitter and see. I put up the two pictures side by side. I couldn't help but be a mean girl and tweet that he will never be as cool as Ronald Reagan. But you can see he's actually trying to pull that off. Today, I want to talk to you a little bit about the Covington High School story. Do you guys remember the Covington High School story? Anyone not remember the Covington High School story? These are the high school boys who were at the Right to Life March in Washington, D.C., and they were waiting by the Lincoln Memorial for their chaperones to come around with the bus, and there was an interaction between them, some people called the Black Hebrew Israelites, a very aggressive group, and a Native American man who kind of got up in their face and was drumming. But there was only a very small clip of it that made the sort of viral social media rounds. It went viral, and when you saw that clip, you could have interpreted it as this boy being somewhat mocking towards the Native American, and he was a veteran, and the young man, Nicholas Sandman, who was part of this high school group, was wearing a Make America Great Again hat. And we're going to talk a little bit about that, because once the full footage came out, we realized that what was being sent around and how that young man, Nicholas Sandman, was being smeared was not at all the reality. But it didn't stop people from just taking that little clip and really putting all their bias and their own opinions and thoughts about conservatives, the worst thoughts they have about conservatives, onto that clip and really trying to ruin this kid's life. So I want to start talking about this Covington scandal, because I think it is the best and the most recent example of what the left is trying to do to activists, conservative activists like you. From preschool all the way through university, the left has been trying to get you. They've been trying to indoctrinate you through cartoons and children's books and your, you know, high school and middle school curriculum with global warming and all the things that they're trying to indoctrinate you with. And yet, you have somehow slipped through their little fingers. They're furious that you have dared to defy them by rejecting their ideology. How dare you think that you can have independent thoughts? And what they've tried to do is silence you into submission by threatening you with racism, sexism, homophobia, xenophobia. And even with those threats, you're here. You won't listen. You joined YAF. You came to the ranch. You watch Fox News or you listen to conservative podcasts. You speak up in class when your crazy Marxist professors say crazy things. In the case of Nicholas Sandman, he traveled to Washington, D.C. with his Catholic school for a March for Life. And liberals hate that cause with a passion. He and his buddies, on top of it, dared to wear the red Make America Great hat. Now, in the immediate aftermath of the viral clip of this confrontation between Sandman and this Vietnam veteran, who, by the way, turns out he never was actually in Vietnam, his name is Nathan Phillips, there's a lot of things that liberals, conservatives, and everybody else in between has argued about or debated about. You know, who started it? Was Nicholas Sandman mocking him? Was Nathan Phillips, the Native American, was he provoking Nicholas? Did the kids chant build the wall? Because that's what Nathan said. There's no video evidence of that, despite there now being lots of video evidence. Nobody said build the wall that we can see on that video. Were the black Hebrew Israelites the real villains in this drama? I would argue yes on that. But there is one thing that both sides, all sides, agree on. And that is that none of this would have happened if the Catholic boys from Covington had not worn the MAGA hat. Everyone knew that the hat had something to do with it. Conservatives thought that they were being punished and unduly smeared because of the hat. Liberals thought they deserved it because they wore the hat. Everyone agreed. And I think that after this incident, however it all turns out, all of you know he's now suing, you know, the Washington Post. He's suing CNN for like $250,000. However it all turns out, all of you know that your moms are going to think twice before they let you wear a MAGA hat on a school trip. It's just a natural mama instinct. Now, a month later, all of you know who Jussie Smollett is from The Empire? He's the one who perpetrated the hate crime hoax in Chicago. When he came up with his fantasy story of what happened to him, he made sure to include the red hat in the story to create sympathy for him, to extract, what we're hearing was to extract more money from the executive producers of his hit television show. But interesting that he included the red hat when he made up the story of being attacked. Actress Alyssa Milano declared on Twitter that the red hat was the new white hood. If you wear it, therefore you must be in the KKK. And that's why this past week in Florida, a bus monitor she treated this young kid. I'll have the link to it for those of you who are watching online. You can pull it up. I mean, it just makes my blood boil as a mom. It was hat day at this Florida school. He gets onto the bus. He's wearing a Trump hat, not the MAGA hat, but a Trump hat. And she made him take it off, and she berated him and, you know, made him feel like he was doing something wrong, that this hat, this ideology it represents was somehow racist or wrong. There's also in New Jersey a case of a 19-year-old who attacked an 81-year-old man for wearing the red MAGA hat. Imagine that. Now, everyone knows that this would have turned out all differently, not just with the hats, but had the boys been of a different race. If they had been Latino or African American, and they had been at a different march, maybe a more politically correct march, and they had waited for their chaperones on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, and adults began to racially insult them and taunt them and get up in their face and What if those kids had the same reaction? They decided, you know what, we're going to sing and we're going to do chants from our school. I submit to you that just like Nicholas Sandman had to go on the Today Show, those kids would also have had to go on the Today Show, except they would not be on the defense as Nicholas Sandman was on the Today Show. These kids would have been celebrated for their restraint. They actually probably would have been proclaimed as civil rights heroes of our times. Here's the number one thing that I learned, that all of us have learned as conservatives from the Covington scandal. Thank God for that extra videotape footage, right? Had there not been that, just imagine what those boys' lives would be now. It's already up in shambles. I mean, they've already been traumatized. But just imagine if there was no evidence to back that up. But there are a few other things that I think we can learn from this Covington event, because for once, actually, conservatives did some things right. And these things we need to continue to do. We handled Covington very well. Just like we handled the injustices of the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation hearing, we handled that well. We need to think about what we did well, because we have to repeat that. Here's what conservatives did. We pushed back hard and fast. Once the extra video footage was recovered from the Covington scandal, proving that the initial reports were 100% wrong, we used our social media platforms to spread the truth. The liberal gatekeepers in NBC and CBS and CNN, they couldn't stop us from sharing that extra videotape footage that proved what CNN was saying was wrong. We called out the liberal network journalists who ran with fake stories and piled on. Conservative pundits and writers went into action to correct the record and defend those students. And I am so heartened that we did. We showed that liberal mob, same liberal mob if you're watching Fox that Tucker Carlson is dealing with now, we showed that liberal mob that we have power too. We refused to cower and leave those Covington High School boys as collateral damage in the resistance or the identity politics war of the left. You young conservatives, you people sitting in this room and watching through social media right now, you are the future of our movement. You are the ones who will be America's defenders of liberty when we are gone. And make no mistake, the left's goal is to shame you into silence. That is what they tried to do in Covington. That is what they try to do every time you see an incident like this happen. It plays over and over again. Why did Jussie Smollett say the hat? Again, they're trying to silence you, because if the hat becomes associated with racism, then who would want to wear it? Who would want to pronounce who they stand for, or what political party they sympathize with or want to be part of? They want to make you feel ashamed to be conservatives, to be Republicans. They want to smear you with charges of racism. Or if you're Hispanic or Black, as I am Hispanic, they want to say that you are somehow a traitor to your race for daring to think differently, for daring not to cower in the face of their verbal abuse and their provocative confrontations. And we cannot let them do that. You need to know, all of you here, because you are on the front lines, that this conservative community is going to stand behind you, that we will have your back, that we will defend your rights to be free and independent thinkers, to exercise your right to free speech, to defend your right to exist. And in this tragic situation in Covington, that's exactly what we did. We had the Covington High School boys' backs. But we had something else that we've never had before to bolster our efforts. We had a president who wasn't afraid to publicly lean into this injustice. Now, a different breed of Republican, someone say like Mitt Romney, for example, he would have completely avoided that story. It's too toxic. Or he might have issued some milquetoast statement about the need to withhold judgment until the facts come in, blah, blah, blah. In other words, he was just going to wait till it all died down and the liberals would have gotten away with it again. But not this president. He weighed in early with clarity, and he invited the boys to come to the White House. Take that, CNN. Take that. We've never seen that before from the top of the Republican Party. Now, I've predicted for a long time, Pat Quayle's in the back, he knows I've been talking about Donald Trump and popular culture and the things that we're going to learn as a party as a movement because of Donald Trump. And for all his excesses, and boy, he has some, Donald Trump is teaching Republicans how to fight like liberals, to be fearless. And we're going to need to have that fearless spirit and that political courage to be conservative activists in the age of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. As a conservative pundit myself, how many of you know the reality show on MTV called The Real World? Any of you heard of that? You guys are so young. It's an old reality television show that started back in the 90s. When I was on that show, I was the first Hispanic conservative on MTV, and I learned very young, at the age of 22, about the myth of liberal tolerance. Some of the people I live with, the people I encountered, are some of the most intolerant people I ever met, and they've never proved me wrong since. As a Fox News contributor, as the wife of a Republican congressman, I've had death threats to myself and to my family. As the mother of a high school activist and a college conservative activist, I have learned a few things about how to defend and protect yourself from liberal indoctrination and outright smears. And so I thought that I would take this time today to share some of those insights with you. So here we go. Number one, never man an information table by yourself. Don't do it. Why? Well, you need at least one other person to videotape any harassment or violence. Did any of you guys see the video clip that came from UC Berkeley of the Turning Point activist who got punched in the face so hard it just made me want to cry? All of you guys saw that? If you haven't, you can pull it up online. Just like with the Covington boys, that guy's only chance at justice was videotape. That's the only reason the other guy was caught and hopefully will be brought to justice. Number two, never lower yourself to a liberal's level. So notice that, you know, we have our red hats. On the other side, they have the pink pussycat hats, right, on the other side. Notice they're not afraid to wear their pink hats. They don't get punched in the face for wearing that. They don't get smeared and have their lives turned upside down because they decide to wear that. You know, to me, that hat represents abortion on demand. I thought until a few months ago that meant through the ninth month. Now we're learning it's infanticide. So that hat to me represents murder. And yet I would never tell them to take it off. That's their right to do that. And I am glad and proud that as conservatives, liberals aren't afraid of wearing their gear, that we don't threaten them. It says a lot about who we are and how confident we are in our ideas and our political philosophy. Now, liberals live by Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. Who here has heard of Rules for Radicals? If you don't know what Rules for Radicals is, write it down, get the book, and read it. You know, they say if you want to learn about Donald Trump, you get The Art of the Deal. If you want to learn about liberals, about Obama, about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Representative Omar from Minnesota, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders. If you want to know, or even CNN, if you want to know how liberals think, you have to read Rules for Radicals. And the rules basically say that the ends justify the means, that nothing, not even violence, is off the table when it comes to advancing their political and ideological objectives. Conservative ideas, on the other hand, are winners. We're confident in our ideas because our ideas actually work. Now just think about Obama. He had 8 years, right? 8 years of implementing his socialist, big government, centralized policies. With 8 years to prove that it would work, guess what? It didn't work. Millions fell into poverty, especially those who voted most enthusiastically for him. Minorities and single women did the worst under Barack Obama. Almost 2.5 million Hispanics fell into poverty. He tried to convince us because there was all these jobs were going over to Mexico and Vietnam and China, manufacturing jobs. He said, listen, manufacturing is dead in America. It's gone. You guys got to get used to it. It's the new green economy. Remember that? He said 2% GDP was the new normal. Because he had the worst recovery since the Great Depression. In just 2 years of Donald Trump and the GOP's economic policy of lowering taxes and reducing regulations, what happened? You are now living in record-breaking economic times. And by the way, this is a blue-collar recovery. Remember they all talked about income inequality? Guess whose wages are rising the fastest? Working class people. Worker wages are rising. Manufacturing is coming back. If you don't live in Wisconsin or anywhere in the Rust Belt, you might not realize just how booming it is. We can't get enough workers. Our manufacturing base is growing. Obama said those jobs are gone forever. Guess what? They're not. He just had the wrong policies in place. America just replaced Saudi Arabia as the number one energy producer in the world. Black and Hispanic unemployment numbers are at record lows. Record numbers of people have replaced food stamps with work and financial independence. We have so much to brag about. We don't need to beat anybody up to make our point. Number three, know your stuff. Today, there is no excuse to not be at the top of your intellectual game as a conservative. Now, I always say, watch and read liberal stuff. That's easy. It's disseminated everywhere. But you need to also get a steady diet of podcasts from people like Ben Shapiro and Michael Knowles and others. You should watch Fox News or download some of the great, we have Fox Nation now, we have great documentaries on there. Your teachers, for example, will never tell you the story of the Clinton scandals. There's a documentary, it's actually very interesting, on Fox Nation right now about the Clinton scandals, about what they got away with. And if you watch that documentary, you'll understand why Hillary Clinton thought she could get away with, you know, taking a hammer and bleach to her server in her home, and why, even though those emails were subpoenaed by the FBI, she thought, and by the way, got away with destroying them. You're going to go home this weekend with an armful of books from YAF. And this will be literature you'll never see at your school. Read it. Put down the Instagram. Let go of the Snapchat for just a little bit and do some reading and deep thinking. There is a reason why Ben Shapiro, Michelle Malkin, and Dinesh D'Souza and others are so good at taking on the liberals. Why? Because they're well-read. Because they're informed. This week, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, or last week, I think, she was at an event, and she proved she's not just economically ignorant, she's historically ignorant. She decided to take on Ronald Reagan and tell outright lies about Reagan's legacy. This weekend, you have the opportunity to learn and fight back these liberal revisionists. Number four, do not trust your school administration when it comes to your activism. You must do your own homework. If your school says you can't do something, check the student and school handbook. My son Jack had a heck of a time trying to start a YAF chapter at his school. Some of his friends from that chapter are here. The school tried to stop him at every single turn. It was an absolute uphill battle trying to get a YAF chapter at a Catholic school. They have tried to undercut him at every single turn. They've used every stall tactic. They've even resorted to calling YAF, my son, and all his friends as alt-right. By the way, my son's Hispanic. He'd be like the weirdest alt-right, you know, guy, but okay. So what was their crime? Why was the administration so upset at Jack and his buddies? Because they were commemorating 9/11, denouncing terrorism and radical Islamic terrorists. Apparently, 9/11, and this was news to me as a parent. I had no idea this was going to be controversial. Apparently, 9/11 is a PC minefield for administrators who worry about anyone being possibly offended by it. If you're writing a letter to your administrator or your administration, make sure you have it saved. Keep a notebook with the dates and maybe even take some notes of what was said. Consider CCing your parents, or if it's a YAF matter, maybe someone from YAF, so that they can know that you have adults backing you and they can't, you know, jerk you around. Keep your parents informed and find a trusted faculty member, if you can, who agrees with your position or agrees with your idea of starting that chapter. One of the things I love about this organization, about YAF, is that they have an incredible staff on hand to help you guys navigate those obstacles at your school. There is nothing the YAF people have not seen at the high school level, at the university level. So going to them with whatever barrier your school is putting up in front of what you want to do on campus, these guys have seen it all, and they'll be able to help you. All right, number five. If you have a good case, sue them. Now, I'm generally not a litigious person. I hate those people who sue McDonald's because the coffee was too hot and it spilled on their lap, or, you know, people take their little kids to the pool and it says no running, and they run and they slip and they slide and they sue the pool and the pool shuts down and now the community doesn't have a pool. I hate people like that. But the truth is, sometimes the only message people get is money. No one likes to lose money, and that's why I have been giddy watching Nicholas Sandman sue the Washington Post, now CNN, and I guess next on his list, this is not the end of it. He's going to go after celebrities, so we're going to see in the coming weeks some celebrity names that he's going to go after. I thought it was interesting. How many of you saw when Donald Trump brought the kid from that got punched in the face from UC Berkeley? Did you guys see that Donald Trump brought him to his rally at CPAC? Did anybody see that? He brought him up on stage and he said, you know, this kid took a punch for all of us. And then he told him, you know, you're going to be rich. You're going to sue him and you're going to be rich. I don't think the kid's going to get rich off of it, but I thought it was funny because Donald Trump really is a litigious person. YAF has done an excellent job of defending young people like you who have had their rights abused by campus bullies. And when push comes to shove, yes, YAF has lawyers to defend you. There are other organizations that defend students as well. Remember, your constitutional rights don't stop at the campus border. Your rights and your liberties come from God. And there are some amazing heroes that have shed blood to make sure that those rights are secured. So you need to keep that in mind. All right, number six, play in the culture. And by culture, I mean pop culture. Pop culture. Now, if there's one thing I learned from getting my start in reality television, is that pop culture is very powerful. I did a reality show, and for about 5 years, I was kind of famous for doing absolutely nothing. And it was a very interesting experience to have as a young person. What it's taught me when I've moved into politics is that conservative politicians, conservative activists in general, tend to underestimate pop culture. A lot of them think it's beneath them, like, you know, the Kardashians, that's beneath me. I'm so intellectual and so smart. But the truth is, pop culture is powerful. Obama knows that. Michelle Obama, Barack Obama used it very effectively during their term in office. They're still using it. I mean, Michelle Obama just showed up at the Oscars and, you know, outdid all the stars at the Oscars. Both of them are on the board at Netflix. Why would they be on the board at Netflix? Because they want to have a say in culture, in popular culture, in what you're watching, what you're seeing, what messages are out there. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez understands the power of pop culture and social media. She is very effective, and whether we like it or not, she is very persuasive in that space. So with young people who don't know any better, They are attracted to what she's saying, attracted to who she is and what she represents, and they are taking in her messages. It's scary, but it's true. Now, Donald Trump is a creature of pop culture. Now, I've studied this for a long time, and I am absolutely convinced that that is precisely why the left hates Donald Trump so much. I mean, has anybody been more hated by the left than Donald Trump? Can anybody name anyone in politics who's ever been more hated? No hands go up, because no one's been more hated. And yet, the guy was a Democrat. The guy is for gay rights. I mean, he's about as on many issues as liberal as you can get. And yet they hate him so much. I think it's because they fear him. They fear the power that he wields in pop culture. And by the way, that's an area that the left thinks they cornered. They own it. They have a monopoly on it. And they are not going to let somebody like Donald Trump, a Republican, take that space. It's why they attack the hat. Think about why they attack the hat so much. How do you guys remember how they lost their minds when Kanye West wore the MAGA hat? I mean, it was like their heads exploded. Donald Trump intuitively and instinctually plays in culture. You know, you can go back and you can actually, you know, this guy, Donald Trump didn't just start tweeting in 2016 campaign. He was tweeting long before. He was playing in the culture. I'm gonna read you a tweet from Donald Trump pre-2016. It's kind of one of my favorite ones. It really just amplifies or is a great example of how he played in culture. So this is a tweet. Do you guys know Twilight? Twilight. Do you remember when Kirsten Stewart cheated on Robert Pattinson? You guys remember this? It was kind of a scandal. Here's Donald Trump weighing in on that. This is a true tweet. You can look it up. This is Donald Trump saying, Robert Pattinson should not take Kirsten Stewart back. She cheated on him like a dog, and she'll do it again. Just watch. He can do much better. What the heck is Donald Trump doing weighing in on this? But he does. He does. If you think back to 2016, he started his campaign by taking on who? Rosie O'Donnell. Remember that in the campaign? That's one of my favorite moments. Do you guys remember this? Megyn Kelly asked him, said, you know, you've been known to say some mean things about women, including comparing them, I think, to dogs or something. And then he interrupted her and said, only Rosie O'Donnell. So he instinctually plays in the culture. It's why he took on the NFL and Kaepernick. He doesn't think pop culture is beneath him. And I say to you two, you are young. You get it better than anyone else. Play in it. Enjoy it. Critique it. Use it. The gatekeepers, the traditional gatekeepers of pop culture, are losing power every day because of this. They're losing power. Support other conservatives on Twitter and in comments. And if you have a knack for the arts, if you like filmmaking, if you think you want to be an actor, if you think it would be great to be a writer, oh my gosh, please do it. Our movement doesn't need another politician. We need that like a hole in our head. You know what we need? We need culture makers. We need people willing to go into the arts and make things that will impact people in a very organic, sometimes subconscious way. Number 7. This is my last tip for you before we take Q&A. Be a happy warrior. Our greatest example of a happy warrior lived right up there. President Ronald Reagan. He was always cheerful. He disarmed his enemies with clever jokes. He made us all feel so good about ourselves. Now, he's a very different president than Donald Trump, but who can deny that Donald Trump looks like he's having a lot of fun taking on the liberals? You know, the left's favorite tactic has always been to make Republicans and conservatives seem unrelatable, uncool. So when Donald Trump was elected, they were so afraid of his pop culture influence that they actually started to say out loud what they had always been quietly doing but never really articulated. And you might remember this. They would say, don't normalize him. Do you remember that? Jimmy Fallon had Donald Trump on his show. He had Hillary Clinton on his show one week. They had a nice chummy, you know, those talk late night talk shows are all chummy and softball questions. And he had a nice little interview with her. And the next week he had Donald Trump on. They were the two candidates left. And in this exchange, Jimmy Fallon, because he's kind of funny, he said, you know, can I touch your hair? And surprisingly, Donald Trump said, yeah, probably only because, you know, he was trying to win the presidency and he wanted to kind of be fun and accessible. And so Jimmy Fallon messed up his hair, and you should look at it. It's really weird what happened to his hair. And you could tell he kind of turns kind of red. But it was a very endearing moment because you knew that Donald Trump did not want his hair touched, but he agreed to it. And it was a sort of very humanizing moment for Donald Trump. Jimmy Fallon was excoriated by Hollywood. How dare you normalize him? For a year, there were celebrities that wouldn't go on his show. In fact, about a year and a half later, he actually did an interview with Vanity Fair where he apologized. He apologized for having the Republican candidate in 2016 on his show after he had the Democrat candidate, Hillary Clinton, and actually, you know, humanizing him. Don't normalize them. That's what they said. That's what they're afraid of. They're afraid of normalizing conservatives. And I will tell you, the more attractive we are, the more fun we have, the more engaged in culture and life we are, the angrier they get. So I say to you, have fun, look good, and don't be afraid to be a happy conservative warrior. Thank you. I'm ready to take questions from any of you here and also those with us virtually. You guys are a great crowd. Thank you for listening so attentively.
Our first virtual question is from Chelsea Abram from Des Moines. Her question is, my career is extremely important to me, but my biggest dream has always been to get married and have a family. What is your best advice for defying the stereotype that you can't have a successful career and be a caring mother and wife at the same time?
Oh, this girl's after my heart, because this is a topic that I talk a lot about. Usually it's college girls who have this question. And so here's my advice to you. And it's quite the opposite, by the way. What was her name again?
Chelsea.
Hi, Chelsea. So I get this question a lot. The advice that comes from college, female college professors, from people like, what's the lady, the CEO of Facebook, that wrote the book Lean In? Her name's going to come to me for some reason. It's not coming to me. But anyway, she said famously that you should put your foot on the gas pedal. This is what she told girls at a commencement address. Put your foot on the gas pedal and don't let go. And my advice to you is exactly the opposite. Feminists would probably get very angry at me for saying this. But I say, first of all, get your education. If you want to get a college education, you should absolutely go and get that and be good at it and do a good job and get your education. But I do think that you should prioritize your love life. For me, what's worked is getting my love life in order, and all these other things just sort of work themselves out. You know, this is not the 1970s where, you know, you had to make a decision between career and family, and there was one or the other. Because of technology, because of the internet, there are ways that you can be in and out of your career. So you can, I look at it instead of like the gas pedal that you put on and you don't let go. I see it more as a train. And in this train, and this is one of the beauties of being a woman in this age, there's this train and you can jump on and you can get back on. Now, there's, you know, June Cleaver. You guys probably don't know who June Cleaver, but June Cleaver was like the quintessential 1950s mom, at-home mom, never left the house. And then you have Barbara Walters over here, like the iconic figure of a working mom and a working woman. And I think there's all this miles of space in between. So I have 8 kids. I probably can't manage to have Barbara Walters, you know, high-powered career. But guess what? I don't want it. I want my version of happiness. And I think that's the beauty of being a conservative woman is you get to define what happiness means to you. So just because, Chelsea, you're, you know, you're female, you know, professors or your women's studies professors say you have to, you know, help the sisterhood and defer marriage and, you know, not have babies and pursue a hardcore career. You don't have to do what they say. You get to do what you want to do. That's the beauty of America. And by the way, that's what I find. They've had all kinds of studies. All the different groups of people, liberal women, conservative women, liberal men, conservative men. This is a study done by, it's called a happiness study done by, it's a social survey done at the University of Chicago. Consistently in this study, it's been done since the 70s, conservative women rank the happiest. And there's a reason, and it's because conservative women have thrown out that feminist rule book, and we just kind of do what feels right for us, for our hearts, for our families. And so you can have both. I got my dream job, by the way, Chelsea, when I was 45 years old, I was a little younger, maybe 44, when I started working for Fox News. I always wanted to do that. And I got it at 44, and I had, you know, 7 kids at the time. So, you know, life has changed. The old rules are old, and you can chart your own course. Thanks for that question. It's a fantastic question.
Hi there. My name is Jane White. I'm from Provo, Utah.
Hi, Jane.
Hi. And I know you didn't talk about this in your speech, but I kind of wanted to just get your take on it. So Trump's wall, while it would keep people from coming into our country legally, like crossing over the border, what will we do about the thousands and millions of illegal immigrants that are here that overstayed their visas? And if it's deportation, how is that feasible and how would we pay for it?
That's a great question. So there are people who overstayed their visas that are here. There are also people, there's an estimate of about 11 million people who crossed illegally and are just living here. My thought is it's pretty hard to do anything about that now. And that's why conservatives have never really, I mean, there's some fringy people who have said, we need to deport these people. But most conservatives say, let's find a way to deal with that group of people that are here illegally. But we're not going to do that until we secure the border. So we don't have yet more waves of people coming over. I have been a big proponent of finding a solution for the DACA kids. That's the deferred action group. These are kids who were brought here. You know, they might have been 1, 2, 5, 12 years old. Their parents crossed the border. You guys know if you were in Mexico living there and your parents said, we're going to cross the border, you don't really have a choice in the matter. You just got here, and you might not know any other country. I know lots of kids who have crossed, who are DACA recipients. Some of them don't even speak Spanish. They don't know any other country. And so this is a group that I think we really need to protect and do something about. But I understand the conservative position is, let's secure the border, and our first responsibility is to the DACA kids. And then we can talk about the 11 million other people after. The barrier to a solution to this problem, and it is a huge problem. You can see it's absolutely overtaken all of our politics right now. And there's a reason. It's not that Donald Trump is drumming this up. This problem is a problem politicians have not wanted to talk about at all, but the American people have wanted to talk about it. And finally, there was a conduit for it. Donald Trump was willing, and he won because he was willing to take on this issue. The holdup is security. If you secure the border, there is a solution for all of these problems. We can tighten up, by the way, the visa program. You're right. More people are here through overstayed visas than because they crossed over the Rio Grande. No question about that. But there are policies right now in place. We have a very generous asylum policy in our country, which means if you are escaping political or religious persecution in your country of origin, we let you come here. We have a court date to determine whether you're telling the truth. And then we determine if you are telling the truth, we say, yeah, you can stay. If we determine you're not telling the truth, then we send you back, right? But the case is that you can actually stay in the country until your case comes up. Well, guess what? There's a backlog. It takes years for your court date to come up. So people stay in the country for years. And guess what? Like, I think 3% show up for the court date. So this is a loophole that has been taken advantage of by people who are in desperate situations, have a reason why they want to come, probably not one of the reasons listed in the asylum rules, but they have determined they think their kids would have a better life here, and they do that. And one of the other loopholes is if you come with a child, your chances of not being sent back are even greater. So now, because of stupid laws that Congress refuses to change, because of stupid laws, people are actually using children as pawns. Some of them are brought over as a pawn so that the adult can stay. Sometimes the adult is their parent. Many times it's not. And then they send them back over and use them again to come back over again with another group of people. On that journey, they estimate that about 30% of the women and girls are sexually assaulted. About 20% of the boys are. This is a very dangerous journey, and one that I've been asking, where's the Me Too movement? I mean, those statistics are staggering, absolutely staggering. They're giving birth control pills to little girls as young as 9 years old in advance of the journey because they expect that will happen. When the Border Patrol takes custody of any of these girls, from nine, if they're as young as 9 years old up to 18, all of them get birth control, pregnancy tests, because they understand the high possibility that they had been raped, sometimes repeatedly, along the journey. So this is serious stuff. And these are policies in Washington that are incentivizing it. And there are people in Washington, namely Democrats, frankly, who don't want to fix this system. They like the way it is, because they think that in some future electoral scheme that they have, that I think they think they will benefit from it, that they presume that those coming over will end up becoming Democrats at some point. And maybe it's a virtue signaling thing, but I don't think there's anything compassionate about the way our system is right now. I have a really, really strong heart for the DACA kids. I have a really, really big problem with how little kids are treated on that journey. And I think the right thing to do is to secure our border. Our Border Patrol, by the way, has not been invited on CNN. I work at Fox. I interview Border Patrol people all the time on my network. And I asked them, what do we need? They said, we need a wall to help us deter. We can't get everywhere. It will actually slow down the crossing over, which gives us time to get over there and arrest the people. We need the wall. We need lots of things. We need technology, but we also need the wall. I asked one of them recently, because I'm learning so much over the last year and a half on Fox, interviewing all of them, of what they're seeing and what they say we need. Remember, these are the experts on the ground. The people in Washington don't know what happens at the border. The Border Patrol knows what happens. So I asked one recently, I said, are you on CNN? Are you on MSNBC? Are you on NBC, CBS, ABC? They're not invited. I also did an interview with Angel Moms, people whose children have been murdered by or killed by illegals that have come over to the country. They've also never been invited on any other network besides Fox. So there's an information gap, and that's the beauty of Fox. That's the beauty of the internet. You got to seek out the information, and I think the experts in this particular issue are Border Patrol. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'm John Harding. I'm from Northern California.
Yes.
In your second piece of advice, you said that we should not stoop to the level of our counterparts on the left.
Yes.
I just wanted to know if you think that applies even when they use ad hominem assaults rather than like statistics or actual data.
Right. I mean, so are you suggesting that your response might be to use ad hominem attacks right back at them?
Yes. Is that a good idea or a bad idea?
I think it's a bad idea because I think that, here's the deal. It depends. It depends on the situation. So I would say if you're in a class and your professor or somebody else in the class is stooping to that, I don't think that's effective. On the other hand, if I'm honest, I do think some of the stuff that Donald Trump has done to diminish some of his challengers, I have to admit, has been a little bit effective. You know, when he says lion head or what was his one for Hillary? Crooked Hillary. These kinds of things kind of catch on. That's his particular technique. But what's interesting is you have to do what works for you, because you remember during the campaign, he started calling Marco Little Marco. Remember that? I like Marco Rubio. He's a nice guy. He started calling Marco Little Marco. And then at one point, Marco started to get, and Marco's not like that. He's a, you know, that's just not his style. He's not that kind of a person. But at some point in the campaign, when it was down to like three or four, and Marco was one of the three or four, he decided, he maybe got advice from somebody, who knows, that you got to punch back. And he started to kind of do the same kind of stuff that Donald Trump does. And it didn't work. He didn't wear it well. I mean, I think Donald Trump is who he is, right? He's absolutely, that's why he was a reality TV star and he was so successful at it. He's just, he's totally comfortable with it within his own skin. And he wears his flaws out there for you to see it. He is who he is. If you try and be the next Donald Trump, it's not going to work for you. And so you have to do what feels authentic, for sure. But I always think that in the end, it's like what we talked about in the speech here is there's no need for us. I mean, we have so much success on our hands. I mean, just 2 years, look at this economy. Look at this economy. It's the envy of the world. And so we ought to really, I think, because no one's going to tout it for us. You're not going to turn on CNN or Univision or Telemundo or ABC or NBC and hear all the great economic news. If we don't get out and tell it on our social media and with our friends and families, no one's going to hear it. And there's nothing like success to prove our point.
Thank you.
Good question, though.
So you mentioned a little bit about basically becoming like educated on all these issues. And recently I've been looking into Reagan, I guess, and what he did during his presidency. And I want to say right now, I have a lot of respect for Reagan and I think he did a lot of admirable things. But I think there's definitely some deification and there's a lot of false, I guess, ideas that a lot of people here for sure have
so
in their
minds.
So
share some of them with me. What, tell me one thing that you think Reagan, people think Reagan did great that you're not so sure about.
For example, we bash Obama for almost tripling the national debt. Reagan more than tripled the national debt.
I think that is an absolutely fair criticism of Reagan and right now as well.
And I don't want, I don't want to like bash on Reagan, but I think we need to recognize that a lot of his policies, like amnesty for illegal immigrants, a lot of people here probably wouldn't agree with that. I think a lot of them don't even know about that.
Yeah,
the full, very true. The federal ban on fully automatic assault weapons was passed under the Reagan administration. A lot of things that were very much not, you know, limited government ideas. Things like doubling foreign aid, Social Security and Medicare was hugely increased. He said he was going to abolish the Department of Energy and the Department of Education. There was huge increases in spending in both those departments. We're still stuck with them today.
True.
I don't know. I guess...
What's your name?
Patrick Warren. I'm from Provo High.
From where?
Provo High, Utah. Yeah.
I think you make a great case. I don't think any president is perfect.
Yeah,
I think
for sure.
Most people take Reagan on whole and they look at things like the end of the Cold War, pretty big deal, and the turning around of our economy and really sort of reviving capitalism. I mean, I think that's something that Trump is also doing, sort of bringing back the idea of being proud about American, entrepreneurial capitalism. And that's something that definitely Reagan was for. But there's absolutely, there's not one thing that you said there that I would disagree with. And I think that those are fair criticisms, things that we should look at and learn from. And I think everybody has, you know, pros and cons, every presidency does. But on the whole, I would say definitely the best president I've ever, you know, I was born during that, I was alive during that period. One of the greatest presidents of all time. But mistakes, absolutely. And kudos to you for being informed. There's a lot of misinformation about Reagan in a lot of your curriculum, your textbooks, And on the conservative side, maybe you make a fair argument that we don't talk enough about some of his shortcomings. But I think on the whole, the measure of his presidency, I think, is pretty great.
Yeah, I would agree.
Good job. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Peyton Story from Canyon High School in New Braunfels, Texas.
What's your name again?
Peyton Story.
Peyton?
Yes, ma'am. Earlier in your speech, you mentioned that Republicans need more people like writers, filmmakers, etc.
Yes.
But what advice do you have for maybe just writers specifically? Because that's such a hard thing to
it's
just
a tough field,
go
isn't
at.
It? Well, I mean, I think you just got to start writing. I mean, I'm a writer too, and you have to. So, are you writing now? Are you a writer right now? Just want to? Something you're
yes.
thinking about? I think the hardest thing about being a writer is writing, and so it's just something you got to do, and you got to make time to do it, to sit down, to write, to come up with an idea, a story. Maybe it's a screenplay. What's interesting now is you see with the sort of proliferation of Netflix and Amazon Prime, there's all these opportunities to do shows, to write for shows that never existed before. I mean, people thought that when cable came, or that somehow, yeah, I remember people wringing their hands when HBO came, that it was and sitcoms were starting to lose their popularity, because that's all we had on the main networks, and people thought, oh, this is the end for writers, and it couldn't be more false. I mean, this is sort of like a writer's renaissance if you're in pop culture in particular. There's so many opportunities. I got offered a part to audition for a Netflix series to play some Latina woman. I turned it down. They required partial nudity. I'm like, no, thanks. But what's interesting is that I don't know if that show, I read the script, I don't think that show would have made it onto network because it's a little bit racy, and it's very niche-y. I think the audience, as I read it, is probably very small. But there's, because of the proliferation of all these different platforms, I think that this is a great time to be a writer. So I would say to you, start writing. Share it with other people in your close circle. Maybe create a writing club of a group of friends that you guys kind of take on a topic. But I would say, start writing.
Our last question comes from Mackenzie from South Dakota. She wants to know what your thoughts are on the censorship of conservatives by Facebook, Twitter, and other social media platforms, and how do we make sure conservatives have a voice?
You know, this is probably the thing that worries me the most. And I can't for the life of me understand, and I'm married to a congressman, why Congress hasn't taken this on. The only thing I can think of is that the left is benefiting from it. Many of those in positions of power within the Republican conference are older and maybe don't quite get what a big issue this is. It's huge. I've been saying for a long time that I think, you know, Donald Trump, because I've heard through the net, through, you know, rumors that there might be an alternative to Twitter. And if Donald Trump jumped on that platform, it would probably be all it needs to take off. But again, we were just talking, Peyton, about, you know, writers and the arts. We need people in the tech world. Look at the numbers. We thought it was bad how liberal the, you know, Hollywood is. You know, 99% liberal. The tech world is the same way, and this is a huge space that they control. My mom is like in her 80s, and yeah, she's a little bit like, she's like to the right of Rush Limbaugh, and she's been banned from Facebook. I don't even think she has very many followers, but you know, she'll post something, and some of it is even international because she's she's from Spain, and so it's been some stuff. There's some algorithm that banned my mom. Then she gets back on, and she's wondered, you know, maybe I shouldn't post this because I want to be able to see all the kids' pictures. I mean, this is a serious thing, you know? So I think it's happening. We're not imagining it. I've posted things that I know would have gotten more traction and, like, no one's seeing it. So I think it was somehow, like, silenced in some way that I can't even see it. And I've had lots of, I know Donald Trump Jr. is taking this on. He's had weird things happen with his accounts as well. So we have to be diligent and watch it and report it. But more importantly, it's people from your generation going into the tech world and making sure that there's some accountability there. Short of that, it's a huge problem. And right now, liberals think they're benefiting from it. And I don't think there's an incentive for them to join with Republicans and make sure that these platforms are open to all ideas, that our free speech is guarded. And so that's where we're at with it. I wish I had a better answer. It frustrates me too. I just really want to thank all of you guys for being here, for listening, for paying attention. You really are the future of our movement. And I don't say that like in some, you know, non-meaningful way, like just something you say. I mean it. I have a son who is your age. I have a daughter just a couple years older. I have a 14-year-old on her way up, and she's going to be coming to her first YAF conference soon. And this organization, the kids that are attracted to this organization are the best in our movement. They're the most engaged. They're the most intelligent. They're the most informed. They're the people that the liberals want to silence the most. You are the future of our movement. Actually, you are the present. You are the culture makers. You are the ones who can make a difference. You know, as I said earlier, we don't need more politicians. We need young people speaking out, being culture makers, and making a difference. And you're doing that. And I really encourage you to take full advantage of the opportunity that you've been given to come to this beautiful place to learn about Ronald Reagan, to learn about conservatism, to learn about our best and brightest thinkers, and to implement that into your own life, to put it to use, and to continue to be that beacon of hope for our country. Our country depends on you, and I don't say that lightly. Our country depends on you. And thank you, YAF, for bringing all these kids together. Take care. Thank you.